Hey, it's the Stick and Axe Show. That's Mike. I'm Adam. And today we have Chad Mark, Director of Grounds for Murfield Village Golf Club, on the show. Also, we do Stick or Hack 90s movies. Some surprising things happen in that segment. And some stories about the comebacks of golf. It's a segment we call Comeback City. Very clever. This is the Stick and Axe Show. Starts right now.
This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It's the Stick and Hack Show.
That was good.
That was good, Shade. Nice one there, buddy. I'm Adam Grubb, the hack. That's Mike Ryan, the stick. And this is the Stick and Hack Show, the most sophisticated golf show in the free world, presented by Manscaped. Go to manscaped.com and use the code STICKANDHACK for 20% off their products. And free shipping, manscaped.com, proud sponsor of the Stick and Hack program. A huge show today. We have guest Chad Mark, Director of Grounds for Murfield Village Golf Club in Ohio, is going to be on the show here with us momentarily, talking specifically about the setup of courses for both the PGA, LPGA tournaments, and being a member course, and having two tournaments back-to-back this year, Mike,
right,
because of a very strange scheduling issue due to COVID.
That's right. I'm super excited about this one.
Yes, you sound like it.
I always do, don't I?
However, this one does hit your
This is in my wheelhouse.
Wheelhouse,
I feel like.
Right? 100%. Probably more yours than mine.
Yeah.
But Chad Mark, Director of Grounds, Murfield Village Golf Club, is on the show and coming up here in just a little bit. First off, we want to talk a little bit about Stick and Hack, and just to remind everybody there out there listening, stickandhack.com. Sign up for free membership today. Become a member of the world's greatest golf club without the course. That's stickandhack.com. It is a collection of misfits. It's a collection of incredible golfers, collection of hacks, collection of people that are coming together to understand that golf is hard enough. Let's have fun with cartoons, podcasts, articles, giveaways, member perks program. The list of reasons for you to be a Stick and Hack member is endless, Mike. I'm member one, you're member two.
Correct.
And we have almost 2,100 members now worldwide of Stick and Hack. Go to stickandhack.com and become a free member today, if you would, please. It is literally free for life.
That's right.
All right, Comeback City. First up here, Mike.
Yep.
So there's people love the comeback. People love the, they love the fall from grace.
On some level, they love the fall more than they love the comeback.
They might. We'll they see. Might. They love the fall from grace, but then they love the comeback. And Tiger Woods' comeback is obviously well documented. We're not going to talk about that today. That is understood, incredible. But there are some comebacks in golf that you probably don't know, some really incredible stories, and we're going to talk about them now. So the name of this piece is Comeback City.
I like it.
Thank you. Brendan Todd. He won the 2014 HP Byron Nelson Classic, and then he got the full-blown driver yips. Yep. My man couldn't hit it off the tee. From 2016 to 2018, he missed 37 of 41 cuts and contemplated quitting the game and buying a pizza franchise. Which, by the way, I have...
Do we know which?
I feel the same way daily.
Do we know which franchise?
No. No.
All right.
But he wanted to... He was going to quit the game. And his next move was buying a pizza franchise. Then after starting the 19 and 20 season with four missed cuts, he won the Bermuda Championship and the Mayakoba Golf Classic in back-to-back starts. And now, honest to God, he is rolling. He is up in the top 10, top 20, every single tournament. He is hitting the ball great. He has that confidence and that swagger. A guy who was going to quit the game a mere 2-3 years ago, now winning tournaments and up in the top 10, comeback city.
His, I will say one thing that what is not on point for Brendan Todd is his fashion game.
he took the Matt Kuchar.
Fashion. Wears the dad hat. He wears the.
Well, if it's a Stick and Hack dad hat,
if it was a Stick and Dad hat.
Right. World Golf Hall of Fame member, 1997 PGA champion Davis Love III, headed into the 2015 Wyndham Championship, having not won since November of 2008. That's a seven-year string of not winning. In dealing with several injuries, he had fusion neck surgery in 2013, foot surgery in early 2005. Love, who had spent 450 weeks in the top 10 in the world rankings, had fallen to 525th. But at 51 years old, Love shot a final round 64 to win the Wyndham by one.
It's pretty good.
Comeback city.
I've always been a huge fan of Davis Love.
I didn't know he had that many injuries and that many issues. I also didn't know it was a 7-year span of not.
Yeah,
many.
He had. I remember that when he had a streak there where it was he had
sucked.
Really bad. Well,
it was a hack.
I wouldn't say sucked. It was It was health issues.
Okay. Just in case we have him on the show.
If you can't swing the club, then
right. Okay.
What are you going to do?
All right. Plagued by back and speaking of injuries.
Yep.
Plagued by back and left thumb injuries in 2016, South Korea's NB Park, who completed the career Grand Slam the year prior, went to Rio for the Summer Olympics, having missed the cut or withdrawn in her last four events, including two majors. With an entire nation on her shoulders, she was even criticized by a lot of people for taking up a spot in the Olympics. Park won the gold medal with the final round 66 to finish at 1,600 and five shots clear of the silver medalist and then the world number one. So it went from, hey, why is she on the team?
Yeah.
Why is she representing the country? Why is she in the Olympics? The biggest, and this was when the Olympic or golf came back in the Olympics
right.
for the first time.
Right. Rio.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she won. So yep. she had, and that's the thing about golf. It is streaky. It is confidence. It is yep. all of a sudden you can find yourself in a spot where you're not doing anything right or you're doing everything right.
That's right.
Oh, well, never mind. More on that in a second.
Okay.
Henrik Stenson reached number 8 in the world in 2000. By the way, Comeback City is the name of first up. These are comeback stories that you haven't heard or maybe have. Henrik Stenson reached number 8 in the world in 2009, a year in which he won the Players' Championship. Then Stenson lost millions of dollars after investing with Alan Stanford of Stanford Financial in what turned out to be a $7 billion Ponzi scheme and led to Stanford's conviction in 2012 and a sentence of more than 100 years.
That one I didn't know about.
Right?
That's
going to mess with your mind a little bit.
Yeah.
Stenson fell to 230th in the world before winning the SA Open in 2012. He won three times in 13, including the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup. He became number 2 in the world in 2014. And in 16, he won his lone major at the British Open. So Stenson lost millions of dollars. And it turned his world upside down. Comeback City. In December 2017, Jessica Korda had surgery to fix chronic painful headaches, a procedure that required her jaw and nose to be broken and more than 25 screws inserted to reset her bones. In her first start of the 2018 season at the Honda LPGA Thailand, she was still eating out of a straw and didn't recognize herself in the mirror. By the way, she won that week, firing rounds of 66, 62, 68, and 67 to set the tournament record at 25 under. To win by 4 shots.
That's
holy cow.
Beyond impressive.
Beyond impressive. Yeah. Jessica Korda, my God, Comeback City.
Yeah.
Those are good stories, Mike.
I like those.
Let's tell you, I got one more bonus comeback story.
Okay.
A bonus one. I don't need notes for this one.
Okay.
So I won a tournament this past weekend.
You did?
I did. Did you not hear about this?
I had no idea.
No kidding.
You didn't even tell me.
I didn't tell you about it?
No.
My God. The trophy happens.
Is that what this thing
yeah,
is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
The trophy happens to be sitting right there. I won the flight in the club championship.
Yes.
And that's a comeback because nobody thought that I could do that. I had nothing happen to me.
Especially after an 8 on the first day.
I had an 8 on day 1 and I thought the tournament was over and I stayed with it and I came back. That's the comeback.
Yeah.
I had an 8 on hole 13. And I thought that was the end of it. But I won, much to the confusion, dismay, and chagrin of every member at the club. They said, what?
You're hurting the brand.
You're
hurting the brand,
saying,
Adam. You're not helping.
Yeah, they kept saying, you need to change the name.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the usual retort so far has been, can you still be a hack if you win a tournament?
Right, yeah.
Well, it's flighted, guys.
I had an 8.
Yeah, well, it's flighted, guys. It's right. Not.
It's flighted, number one, and I hit an 8, and I hit it twice out of grass that was 18 feet tall because that was a decision I made as opposed to just taking it out and taking it unplayable. I said, oh, I'll just hit it again, and it went 5 feet the second time, lost it the second time.
That's why you got to know the rules.
Yeah, that's a bit of an issue. Let's bring in our conversation. By the way, I'm club champion.
Yes. Correct.
Let's bring in Mr. Chad Mark, Director of Grounds at Murfield Village Golf Club. Chad, welcome in to the Stick and Hack Show.
Well, thanks for having me, and congrats on the win this weekend.
Oh, what's that again, Chad? Congratulations for the what?
Congrats. Are they going to rename the flight now? Is that going to be the Hack Flight from now on?
It should be, Chad.
They will never have that flight again. It will shut down the tournament altogether. All right, so you are director of grounds at Muirfield Village Golf Club. Muirfield Village opened in 1974 and designed by Columbus native Jack Nicklaus. Muirfield Village has hosted the PGA Tour's Memorial Tournament every year since 1976. And you guys have also hosted Ryder Cup, President's Cup, Solheim Cup, and the U.S. Amateur. And now, Chad, you are in charge. My God, how does that feel and why?
Well, I mean, it's an honor. Obviously, I grew up close to Columbus. I went to Ohio State. This is a dream job for me because of being a Buckeye. It's probably the job that I would want the most in the country. So I'm obviously very honored to be here.
So tell us in just simple terms, what does your job title mean? What is your job? What is your position? And in most cases, a grounds crew and a superintendent and those that are in charge of a course can be sticks or hacks themselves. So which are you, sir?
Well, professionally, I'm a stick. But, golf-wise, we might have a debate on that. I'm probably a hack in golf. But I guess to put it, in the easiest description I can, my job is basically the superintendent position. I'm director of grounds. I have a superintendent that works beneath me. And then we have 40 guys that take care of the golf course and grounds here at Muirfield Village. I keep telling people that my job description should be that I am the expert nitpicker because I walk the golf course every day. And, my assistant James just gets picture after picture of things we need to do better. And, we just are looking to make sure we do what Jack would want and keep it as perfect as it can be on a daily basis.
Awesome. Now you said what Jack would want. You're talking about your boss, Jack Nicklaus, which I'm sure is very difficult to say out loud. And if it were me, I would say it at every chance I had that I have to, I'm sorry, I can't have lunch with you. I have to go deal with a problem that my boss wants. Oh, who's your boss? Jack Nicklaus. And then you just leave the room. Is that kind of how it works?
It's an honor, and it's a lot of fun working with him, especially this year with the renovation. He's great. I think that the great part about Mr. Nicklaus is that he tells us what he wants, and he lets us do our job and get there. We know the expectations, and he doesn't really get into the weeds too much about that. He lets us do our job, and we just know the expectation. I tell our guys that we need to be Jack ready every day, come up from Florida whenever. And we don't want him to show up, and you can't fake it. Either you're doing it right or you're not. So we're Jack ready every day. That's our goal.
That's awesome. Chad, a lot of people may not know, you came from another iconic course, honestly, in my opinion, in Inverness. Was that a tough decision for you to leave Inverness and go to Muirfield? I'm sure it was, but just curious to hear your thoughts.
It was extremely tough, especially given that I was only there a year. And, I'd spent 14 years as the head superintendent at Kirtland Country Club in Cleveland, which is an old classic CH house, great golf course, great membership. And I made the tough decision to move my family to, Toledo. And I really wanted to be at Inverness for a long time, wanted to see the kids in school. We had a lot of great things started at Inverness in that year that I was there. We really tried to go in there and change the concepts of what we were doing. We hired an architect to go back to the Donald Ross design, and we were working on that. And, I got a phone call and said, hey, I know you just moved, but I really think that you should make the move down to Columbus. And my initial thought was that I can't do that. I can't, even though Muirfield Village is my dream job and there's no doubt about it that it is.
Right.
The timing of it really tore me up because, I just got there. We built some relationships in that first year, hired an architect, going to do a master plan. And, to turn my back on that was tough. But, you kind of relate it to, Coach Meyer being at Bowling Green in Utah and then, building those programs and recruiting all those kids and really believing that you're going to be there a long time, but then you get a call from Florida, you get a call from Ohio State, as great as Inverness is, the chance to host the PGA Tour event on an annual basis and to work with the greatest golfer of all time was too much of an allure for me.
Right.
And it's funny because I was so worried about calling all those Inverness members that I was close with and saying, hey, I'm leaving. And it was just, it was hard to do. And every one of them said, I would have kicked your butt if I found out you did.
When you,
you know, they were great.
When you laid it out like that, that you get to work at a course that hosts a PGA Tour event every single year, and that you work with Jack and you are at this iconic course, I mean, it's a no-brainer. And you know, your loyalty and your understanding of your job at that point is admirable, but at some point you just got to go, okay, this has got to be the move that I make. Now, you guys have had a very eventful year, and for those that don't know, you guys hosted two PGA Tour events back-to-back weeks that were very different in nature. They were very different in the caliber of the top players that were there. And it was very different in the fact that you had weather and you had two course setups back-to-back weekends because of, the need for, well, maybe I'll just ask you, geez, you're the one in charge of it. Why did you have two course setups back-to-back weeks?
Yeah. Well, when the tour asked Jack and asked us if we could pull off 2 weeks in a row. Obviously, I wasn't thrilled about the first mid-July tournament. It's the Midwest, you know, the toughest 2 weeks of the year, probably the two weeks we had a tournament. But you know what? The circumstances that they came to us with the thought that it would be great to keep the players in one spot once the John Deere Classic canceled. And they thought that with our facilities, our driving range, the golf course that we have, that we could pull it off, you know. Being that I'm a stick, you know, we immediately embraced the challenge and said, yeah, we'll pull this off. And you know what? We had the concept of saying, we're going to do two different setups, two different green speeds, you know, use different hole locations. They're going to let it go the second week and we can get firm and fast and kind of give them a championship caliber golf course. But if the weather doesn't cooperate, that's a great theory, but you know, it doesn't happen. Fortunately for us, the weather did cooperate. We got a couple of timely rains during the first event. Our green speed target for the first week was to try to be somewhere between 11.5 and 12.5. And we did that. We started the week at about 11.7 and we just trended upward that whole week. And then we were going to get the green speed up a little bit the following week and really try to firm it up more than anything. Because firmness and wind gets these guys more than anything. You know, when they can't control the spin, that's when you can get a little bit of high scoring and you can get them challenged. So we can't control the wind, but we can control the firmness. And we tried to do that the second week. I would tell you that there's a lot that goes into that though, because we have our targets from advanced weeks from years past to get to the mid 13s to 14 area. And so when they first came to me and said, hey, we need to be at like 11, 11 and a half the first week, it's just not possible to get where we wanted to be week two. So we worked with the tour to do that. It worked out great. We had two great champions, two great weeks. Our staff really embraced it. It was fun.
So that answers or brings me to my next question, which is who makes those decisions to speed up the greens, to lengthen the rough, to make the course what it is for each week, not just for your members, but in a tournament format, who is making those decisions and how much information is the PGA Tour or the LPGA Tour in some cases giving you for their course setup?
It's a great question. You know, for the most part, the PGA Tour makes those decisions on a weekly basis. And those guys are professionals. I've worked a lot of U.S. Opens and U.S. Women's Opens and, you know, watched USGA come in. And I've worked with the PGA Tour now for several events. And I will say that they're just so good at their job. They can do a great setup on a week-to-week basis. The one thing that we have at Miracle Village in the Memorial Tournament is that we have the jackback, is what we call it.
I mean,
he has a certain level of expectation. So when you look at our event on an annual basis versus a lot of other events, our rough's a little bit longer, our greens are a little bit faster, and we have a little bit, you know, tougher test for the guys. And, you know, it's a good way for those guys to prepare for the U.S. Open on a regular basis because it's usually 2 weeks later. You know, that was something that we had in mind when we did these two setups as well, though, because as much as we can say, okay, hey, the workday event's going to be just a regular tour event, you still have the jackback, and you have, you know, the PGA Tour rules officials saying, hey, we want to move it up on 14 a couple of days. How will he take that? And, you know, what if we move this whole location here? What if we go up a tee on number 8? Well, how will he take that? So the tour does make those decisions, but they work very, very closely with my staff, and they know that, you know, if I have to, I'll say, well, you know, Jack's not going to like that. I guess I'll have to get him involved. And then we usually win our battle there and we get our way. We do work hand in hand on the rough, though. The rough is a tough thing because they don't want to get anything out of hand. And I know with the history here that we can cut at a certain point and let it go. And they have to be comfortable and trust me. And there's a lot of trust that goes back and forth in that relationship to make sure that we don't get a tournament that gets out of hand.
Yeah.
Mike, I know you got a question, but I want to make sure that I get this idea out here. Is there anything that you want us to do from a Stick and Hack t-shirt perspective with Jack Reddy and the Jack Factor? Because if you're...
I've noticed on your podcast you have a lot of t-shirt money ideas.
I do. You know? None that we're actually going
none that are actually executed on, but it's fine.
We barely have gotten shirts with Stick and Hack on them, let alone. But I think it just... Think about it. Come back to us. But if your crew, if your 40 crew members had Jack Reddy on there, I mean, come on, that's going to get him in a sense like, okay, we got to get things together. Obviously, sponsored by Stick and Hack on the back. Just an idea. Think about it.
Well, this year they're wearing bracelets that say "Embrace the Grind." We did that back in January before we knew this was going to turn into the year. Before, so it's been very good full motto for this year.
Yeah, nice. Indeed.
Nice, Chad. I don't think a lot of people probably realize this, but the difference between running a golf course every day for, say, your membership versus the tour and a professional tournament, how different is that for you? Just trying to make sure that you're catering to, you know, on the everyday golfer and those guys that are members and you know, are on that course every day versus when you've got tour players coming in.
I get that question a lot, and quite frankly, you know, I've always throughout my career said, hey, you know, we're going to do championship conditions on a daily basis. And to some point, that's true. I mean, we have quick greens, our fairways are tight.
Yep.
And we know at Muirfield Village that some people have been waiting a year, 2 years to come play here as a guest. And it's, you know, kind of like going to Disney World. So we have the pressure of knowing that we got to be good every day because you never know how long somebody that's on that guest list has waited to come play here. But we pick up the frequencies of which we do things when you get into a tournament. So when we normally double cut in the morning in July, maybe roll every second day and have greens that are around 12 every day, that's different than cutting twice in the morning and rolling twice in the morning and cutting again twice at night and rolling again twice at night and being 14 and having some of the slopier green, you know, spots on the green be our hole locations. The other thing is the normal player cannot play out of the rough that we produce for the tournament. We top it at 4 inches. By the end of the week, it's like six and a half, maybe more. And it's amazing what these guys do out of it. But we always have an outing the day after the tournament. And we leave the place the way it was the day before, but we don't even cut anything. We leave the greens, and they're probably 12 and a half. And the rough's what it is. They can't find balls. They can't get out of it. You know, they just finally just throw it in a fairway. And so, you know, what the tour guys do is amazing, and what they can handle is amazing. We would have an average round of 5.5 hours if we had those kind of conditions on a daily basis.
Right.
But I will say that we do take it serious and try to make the presentation similar, and it's just picking up the frequencies. I mean, we're doing a lot more night work for tournaments, coming in and filling divots every night and mowing every night and doing our watering at night with hoses instead of, you know, running heads. Everything's just a lot more attention to detail, fine-tuning during usually the advanced week of tournament week. This year it was for 3 weeks. But it's an intense operation. It costs, you know, a lot of hours and a lot of tired guys and sleepless nights. So luckily we don't have to do two every year.
Well, I'll tell you what, you guys are the unsung heroes, and I don't say that lightly. Your crew and your team, because you guys are on Showcase on a national spotlight, and your tournament specifically is one of those that everyone looks forward to. It almost is a fifth major in some cases. And we've heard people say that, right?
Yeah.
The top guys go there. You're on Showcase. You're being talked about by Nance. You're being talked about by pros even. And we have heard in years past, some of these pros really pipe up about the course conditions of certain courses that they are playing that are either too tough, too easy, too annoying, too gimmicky, whatever the case may be. We don't hear that about Memorial or about the Memorial tournament. We don't hear that about Muirfield specifically. Do you take a sense of pride in that and understand that, you know, if no one's talking about you, then that's a good thing?
Yeah. I think most of the time that you get talked about, it's in the negative. You know, something happened where the greens aren't good, or, you know, there's a lot of pressure on superintendents to perform, and there's tough weather conditions, and, you know, we're not in control of that. So there's certainly things that could go the wrong way. Luckily for us, we've, you know, done a good job of managing that stress as we went into the tournaments this year, and we do most years. But this year, especially with what we did the second week, where we were going to let things go a little bit, we were going to try to firm the place up. We were going to, you know, let things wilt to some degree. I asked, I guess this is a little quick story. On Monday after the workday, so Monday of tournament week for the Memorial Tournament this year, we were looking at some of the renovation work with Mr. Nicholas. And someone in the group said, how fast and firm are you going to make it this week? And I said, well, it depends on how, you know, tolerant of brown he is, and pointed at Jack. And he says, well, I'm colorblind. I go, well, perfect. And we're going to let it go. And it's going to get firm and it's going to be fast. And so, but there's a fine line, you know, because you've seen the criticisms at Shinnecock and the other places where the USGA got a little too far. And you saw it where they went too far one day, and then they went too far the other way and got it wet, and scoring completely changed. The players don't want to go back and forth.
Yep.
So what our intention was is to continue on that rise, like over the 2 weeks, really, and definitely during the Memorial, where, yes, it was firm and fast on Thursday. Maybe it was a touch firmer and faster on Friday, a touch firmer on Saturday. And then we did get, you know, the slugger called, Steve Rintoul called, our agronomist Thomas Bassus called, all within 20 minutes. So I knew that they'd all been talking, and they all had the same question. Is it going to get out of hand tomorrow because the winds are now at 25 to 30 miles per hour gusts? Because when you start get that firm and fast, they did not want us out there syringing in between groups. They didn't want anything to get away from us. So, you know, we talked through it and said, Ed, look, we'll put some water on the greens tonight, but the greens have to be every bit as firm as they are Saturday. We won't pick up a little bit more and get a little firmer, because you don't want these players to come out there and expect something, playing for millions of dollars, and then it changes drastically. So that's where you got to have that trust and, you know, make sure that everybody's on the same page. But, you know, we were on the edge a little bit that second week. And I think one of the nicest articles I saw, someone sent me an article from Golf Digest afterwards talking about just what you said, Adam, that we took it to the line, but we didn't cross it. And it was a good setup that the players said, hey, that's a great test. That's the toughest I've seen on tour for a while. But it wasn't over the top. And you know, there's always going to be a few guys that complain. That's the way it is with every club. I mean, you alluded to it earlier that some guys say the greens are slow, some guys say the greens are fast, some say that's right. You can't please everybody, but I think for the most part, the players, the rules officials, and the tour was happy with how we were able to give them two drastically different golf courses. And the second week, we didn't go over the line. It was good.
Can you imagine if one of the members is like, you know, complaining about the course, and his retort is, well, the PGA had no problem with it.
Yeah.
The top 25
that would
golfers
be my only response.
In the world
yes.
had no issues with
yes.
it. So why don't you sit over there, Blake, and leave us alone? Why don't you go to a muni course?
Chad, you talked about you guys, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but you guys are going through a renovation. What are your thoughts on kind of the never-ending arms race in golf to add length to golf courses that we've been seeing? You know, I assume that puts a lot of pressure on you guys when you think about it about a redesign. What are your thoughts there?
It's something that we talk about a lot. As you guys know, my boss had some thoughts about the golf ball that he shared on the telecast. And, you know, it's getting to the point where it's not cost effective. We don't have enough land. You know, we're landlocked on most golf holes now. We didn't have any spots to move tees back on a few holes that Jack would have liked to add length during this renovation. So we moved the green instead. But it's tough. I mean, because now you got guys that are, you know, the mark used to be that we looked at like a 318 to 323 mark, you know, as a landing area for the biggest hitters. And now you got Bryson, I think, was 38 yards out on one. It was a 370-yard drive.
Bryson,
I was just in a conversation.
I think the stat you're looking for, Bryson, longest drive is 687 yards.
Yeah. Is that the one off the cart path?
Yeah. No,
but,
no.
You know,
ironically, it wasn't.
It's funny because I think as you get into this renovation especially, and you talk about, okay, what can we do to make this golf course a great test on a yearly basis, when we are landlocked, I mean, for the most part with Ling. I got asked the question over and over again. I got asked the question on Friday afternoon before he blew up, you know, what about Bryson's, you know, drives and how far he's hitting it on 14 and how far he's hitting it on, 13 and one. And I see he's one or two over. He's going to miss the cut. And the reality of it is you still have to be able to navigate these greens. And I think Jack's looking at that as we do this renovation is, okay, how can we make sure that the second shot values here are what they need to be to make a true test? And, you know, we talked a lot about what do we do on number five because, you know, they don't have to hit driver there. They can hit a hybrid or a three wood, and they can hit another hybrid, and they can be on the green. And the landing area is a landing area, and he thought about moving creeks and everything else. And finally, you know, he watched everyone play the golf tournament, and he said, you know, that's the landing area. And I don't know why I'm trying to make him hit driver to get to that landing area. The second shot's got to be the key. And so, you know, he shifted the green and made it narrow and bunkered it heavily and put water a little bit more in play by shifting the green over a little bit. And now they're really got to think about, hey, is it really worth it for me to hit, you know, a hybrid or a three wood into that?
Yep.
And so, you know, I think it'd be great if the ball changed, but there's just no way I think that can happen anytime soon with the lawsuits you'd have with manufacturers. I think that the value needs to be on those second shots because these guys are going to bomb it. And you can put trouble at the driving zones, but you're going to keep moving hazards. I mean, if you put bunkers at 325 today, I mean, what do you got to do? 10 years from now, you're going to move them 30 yards down. And then that doesn't really carry over well for our member play either, you know. So, you know, absolutely, trying to make sure you have a wide landing area for your members, a narrow landing area for your PGA Tour pros is something that we're looking at as we do this renovation. But it's a problem. Obviously, these guys are really good at what they do, and they're bombing it. And if guys that are hitting it 355, 370 every week start winning every tournament, then I think we'll have to revisit it. But if we can make the second shots in the green complexes, you know, interesting and hard, and I think that we'll still be able to, you know, save ourselves a little bit without the light.
Yeah, I love that approach because I myself have thought that same thing that, you know, it's not necessarily the length that's the thing that we need to focus on. It's the other parts of the game that you need to be better at and make it harder for guys that I think makes, A, the game more fun and interesting, and, B, you're not stuck with this. I'm trying to shove a tee 30 yards back every 5 years. So,
well, and I think –
well,
go ahead, Chad, sorry.
Well, I walk the golf course every morning, and I flip nines. And so a practice round, Charles Howell was walking – the front nine when I flipped over to the front nine and, you know, he had some really neat ideas and a couple of them I shared with Jack, but he, you know, he said, you know, how everybody's hitting the ball over the 12 tees and over the trees on 12 and landing it down the slope on 13. He goes, all you got to do is move the tee up. He goes, cause they wouldn't be able to get the ball up over three.
Right.
So, so there are other solutions.
Yes.
To this, absolutely. You know, that you have to look at and you have to think about, and make guys, you know, you can't make guys play the golf course as it's designed every single time. I mean, because everyone's going to look for an advantage. It's like that old adage in NASCAR, where if you're not cheating, you're not trying, or something like that.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, there's guys that are going to look for a different angle. Who knows if that angle works? You know, some of the things some of the guys tried this year didn't work. They didn't really score well trying to overpower the golf course. Yeah. So I think the second shot values are what Muirfield's known for, which is going to make us a test every year.
I think what's interesting is that with the hacks, there's no real thought process other than I need to get my driver out, and then I need to hit it near the green and hopefully chip on and two putt for a bogey. That's typically the thought process for a hack. So to hear this thought of these second shots and how the setup is and where you want these guys to land it, that's the part of the design of courses that is just over my head, which might be surprising to many of you. But it's fascinating because there is so much thought and ingenuity and a true science, both of a mental science and a physical science of design of a golf course that I don't think gets enough love and enough attention with some of these architects. It's not just the beauty, it's the thinking behind where things go inside a course and how it can play for a PGA, because your course is a perfect example, a PGA Tour pro and a 15 handicap who's a member there because they live near you, right?
or they have a national membership. Either way, about half and half here.
Wow,
half and half.
Excuse me.
We got about half our members are local and half are national.
Excuse me.
So you guys fall into national. You guys would be good.
Yes.
We'll look into that. We got to sell.
Could you talk to Jack for me on that one?
Yeah, we need to sell some of those Jack T-shirts first, and then we'll be in
a lot of great T-shirt ideas. So
there we go. Hey, we're more than T-shirts, Chad. Here at the Stick and Hack Show. Yeah. Not much more. No. Chad Mark, Director of Grounds at Murfield Village Golf Club. Chad, a pleasure and a thrill to talk to you. Just an incredible job there. You do have a dream job for many and for yourself. Congratulations on all your success. Congratulations on two incredible tournaments back-to-back, pretty much unknown and unheard of in PGA world. You guys did an incredible job. So congratulations, and thank you for being a Stick and Hack member, and thank you for being on the Stick and Hack Show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I had a blast.
Great. Thanks, Chad. Chad Mark, Director of Grounds at Murfield Village Golf Club. Mike, that's conversation, awesome. Yeah, I knew that's a conversation for you. I mean, I enjoyed it. I like him. You know, don't get me wrong. I loved it. But that had you written all over it. And when I guess I didn't realize how much the greens are really, it seemed like, the focus of setting up a course. Because he said he doesn't really touch the rough and some of these other things.
Yeah.
That the green is really the secret sauce when it comes to and the areas around the green. And that makes sense because I can drive the ball 250, right? But I still have to and be 150 out or 100 out.
Right.
There's still a lot of work that's left to be done in that last 100 yards.
Yep.
And that's where you do separate. And the other interesting thing he said was how good they are out of that rough, because that rough sounded terrible.
Right. Well, and to me, the thing that I don't think people realize is when you have well-kept greens and they're healthy, how much you have to do to them to keep them fast.
Yeah.
Because you have to, it's a fight, because the greens, when they're healthy, they're going to keep, they just grow like crazy. So they're constantly having to roll and cut and roll and cut and roll and cut. But then at the same time, keep the moisture in them so they don't die.
Right. Everybody knows that, Mike. I mean, it's a very simple thing. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I'm going to be honest with you. I literally stopped listening 30 seconds ago.
I don't even know why I try to.
All right, let's go into the, let's go into
I
the
try, game. I try to broaden your horizons. I try to educate.
Mike, I'm club champion, okay? Flight winner, club championship. I don't need to be broadened any further than where I am. Fine. Let's play Sticker Hack. You want to do that?
Sure.
Sticker Hack, 90s movies. So this is Sticker Hack, 90s movies.
We did this a couple weeks ago.
Well, we did the alt-rock bands, 90s alt-rock bands.
Yeah.
So, a couple shows ago we did Stick or Hack, 90s alt rock, and A through C, by the way.
I mean, we're showing our age.
That's fine.
Well,
they can see us
here. Duh.
For me, music and movies, the 90s were it.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything better.
I agree.
And that could be an entire show. The name of the show, we'll do a t-shirt called 90s Nothing Better.
It's another one. Just throw that in the bin.
Right where it belongs.
Throw that in the bin.
All right, Sticker Hack 90s movies.
Yep.
Titanic.
I'm going to go Stick.
Yeah, I'll go Stick. You know, I didn't see that movie for the first 10 years it was out because I was put in a stand. I'm going to say I'm not going to watch Titanic because it was the number one movie.
Yeah.
It was massive. Yeah. So I'm not going to watch it. I was that guy.
I know.
Yeah.
You are.
But I did watch it. I loved it. It was fantastic.
was it delightful?
Shame on me. Batman and Robin.
Hack.
I don't know
that one.
It's pretty bad.
I mean,
Joel Schumacher did not do any justice.
Chris
O'Donnell and what's his name?
Was it Clooney?
Yeah, it's George Clooney.
That was bad casting. The worst.
That's bad casting.
The worst Batman.
All right, Hack. Agreed. You've Got Mail.
I'm gonna go with Stick.
Hack. I disagree 100%. It's a remake of the movie you already did, Sleepless in Seattle, some 5 years before. It's dumb. You've Got Mail.
I don't know.
Meg Ryan, I'm not a big Meg Ryan fan
Either
in anything. I didn't even like her in When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
which also is a whole other thing.
Right. I can't ignore this right now. Are you hearing this music?
Is he on?
There's like a bluegrass concert going outside our window.
Is Shane playing acoustic music to a school classroom? What in the hell?
Somebody requested Skinner or something. I don't know.
All right. Next, Speed. Stick or hack 90s movies. Speed.
Hack.
Speed. No way.
Yeah.
Hack. Absolutely not.
No.
Stick. 100%.
That movie.
Sandra Bullock. That was her.
Good.
Oh.
I didn't like Keanu in that one.
Oh, who does? Nobody likes Keanu. Isn't it.
He had some movies that were endearing.
Name one. Thank you.
The Surfer movie. What was that Surfer movie?
Surfer movie.
Where he was the surfer and the undercover FBI agent.
Oh, what was it, Shane? Point Break.
Point Break.
Nice work.
There it is.
Yeah, that's a stick movie. But
Patrick Swayze? I mean, that movie.
All right, we're getting off topic here. Con Air. Stick or hack? 90s movies.
Hack.
Stick. You're out of your mind. John Malkovich? Come on. Now, what's his name's?
Nicolas Cage?
Nicolas Cage. His accent is an abomination.
Well,
In most cases, Con Air
We should do one of these with just Nicolas Cage.
Oh, I agree, and that'll be the longest streak of hacks you've ever heard in your life.
He's had a
name one. Exactly,
The Rock.
Welcome to The Rock.
Yeah.
No, that movie was held up by
that's Sean Connery, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Notting Hill, sticker hack 90s movies.
All right, I am going to say this, and I'm going to get destroyed for it, but I'm going to say that is a stick movie.
I agree.
Thank you.
100%.
Yeah.
Notting Hill is a stick movie.
That is a guilty pleasure
mine too.
Movie for me. Yeah.
Mine too. That and Love my Actually. Wife, maybe I'm wife, just a Hugh Grant fan.
Yeah, my wife makes fun of me.
No. Oh, come on. Notting Hill
she
is a
great movie.
She
likes the movie, but she just makes fun of me because I'm a dude and I like Notting Hill.
She needs to get to 2020. The Matrix.
Stick.
I've never seen it.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
I knew you were going to do that. I've never seen it. I swear to God, I've never seen that movie.
Oh, my God.
So I'm going to call it a hack. You know why? Because Keanu Reeves is in it.
Now, what I will say is the first time I saw that movie, I had no idea what the hell was going on. No. I had to watch it like three times before I understood it.
Groundhog Day.
Stick.
Stick, 100%. Yeah. Crimson Tide.
Stick.
Stick. Shawshank Redemption.
Goat. Stick.
Never seen it.
Shut up.
I promise you, I've never seen it. I know. I do understand the issue. Look at you. I understand the issue. I have never seen it.
I'm like almost. I'm borderline tears.
I've never seen it.
How have you never?
I watch movies all the time, and I've never seen that movie.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
Well, we're watching Shawshank Redemption this weekend then.
And then yes. Notting Hill. We'll have a nice weekend.
I like it. Sounds fun.
Blair Witch Project.
Hack.
Stick. That movie.
It's terrible.
No, it's not terrible. That movie, from a production perspective, from a marketing perspective, everything about it,
was a gimmick.
Is stick, in my opinion. No doubt. It was back in that was the scariest movie that I saw back in the 90s.
Meh.
Clueless.
Hack.
I want to disagree with you just for show's sake, but Alicia Silverstone.
No.
Did she die, Alicia Silverstone?
No.
I think she did.
Her career died.
That's the same joke we used last time. We'll just do that every single time.
We just recycle jokes. It's not like we have any actual creative talent.
That's Dick right there, Mike Ryan on the Hack Adam Grubb. Thanks so much for listening. The greatest golf club in the free world. Without the course, it's Stick and Hack. Go to stickandhack.com. Sponsored by Manscaped. Manscaped.com. Get 20% off your products and free shipping. Use the code Stick and Hack. My thanks to Chad Mark, Director of Grounds at Murfield, for being on the show. We'll see you soon. Mike, I'm proud of you. Congratulations.
Proud of you, man.
Champion.
Club champion.
Club champion. Flighted.
That's right.
No doubt.
Well,
but nonetheless. You guys have a great week. Thanks so much for listening.
Peace out, guys.
The Stick and Hack Show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.